This is PRN.FM. PRN.FM. The number one station for progressive minds.
Progressive minds.
Come get yourself a song to sing and sing it till you're done. Yes, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber bands straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found. Whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a screaming now.
Presenters, this is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus, the show Alternative Visions, where we talk about solutions to America's many crises, not just the problems. The topic today is the coming attack on Social Security as part of Phase 2 of the so-called fiscal cliff deficit-cutting negotiations that are ongoing and still taking shape in Washington, D.C. Fiscal cliff, deficit cutting, a.k.a., I like to call it, austerity American style. As you know, this show has been focusing intensely since November on the so-called fiscal cliff shenanigans in Congress going on between Republicans and Democrats, Boehner, Obama, and all their friends, and that I've been predicting way back in mid-November, right after the elections, that there would be a deal. Many said there wouldn't. Well, there was a partial deal on January 1st. I also said all this fiscal cliff nonsense would take three phases. We'd have a partial deal on January. We'd have another big negotiations and another deadline date in early March. And then there'd be even a third deal later in the year. And that the mix would be 6-1, meaning for every tax hike on the rich, there'd be $6 in tax hikes on the middle class and or cuts in spending. And that's exactly what we had. We had a token tax increase on the rich, way less than even Obama had asked for and said he would hold firm on. And we're going to have a real big corporate tax cut coming later in 2013 as part of the Phase 3 deal. Now, the CEOs are all lying behind Obama, so you know it's going to happen. And we're going to have big cuts in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, well over $1 trillion. That's coming in part in the second phase, undergoing right now, and in the third phase that will happen later in the year. All this will include token defense cuts, and a lot of the spending cuts will be backloaded into out years because the economy is still so weak. All this fiscal cliff stuff about a recession if they didn't pass it, if they didn't do austerity, is all scare tactics, as I wrote in various articles. By the way, you can read my articles here on Progressive Radio Network, some of them, and or on my blog. The blog is just jackrasmus.com. Take a look at it. Or catch my one-liners on my Twitter account, which is #drjackrasmus. Also, if you want a real in-depth account of what's been going on and what will go on, there's my article that just appeared a few days ago in Z Magazine called The Three Faces of the Fiscal Cliff. You can also get that on my website. Just Google me, Jack Rasmus, and the website is Kiklos Productions. Go to articles and you can read it for free. Well, so far, Phase 1 agreement on the fiscal cliff. What happened? Well, Obama said he wanted initially $1.6 trillion in tax hikes. He got $600 billion. He dropped $1 trillion. Republicans didn't move at all. And he said he wanted everybody over $250,000 a year to pay more, the top 2%. Well, what we got was everybody over $450,000. $1,000 a year, which is a little bit over the top 1%. And the wealthy got a reduction in the estate tax, even more, an exemption for good from the alternative minimum tax. All these tax cuts were made permanent, and we got deductions. And deductions are going to deepen into the middle class. So, in other words, Republicans and the wealthy got just about everything. And Obama got virtually nothing. And now the Republicans are saying, oh, no more tax hikes on the rich. From now on, it's all spending cuts. And Obama says, oh, no, we're going to have more tax hikes. Yeah, mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not going to be blackmailed anymore on this debt ceiling deal coming in March. Oh, yeah? Watch it. We're going to have a new debt ceiling debacle 2.0 here in March. 1.0 accord happened, actually, back in August 2011. So this is going to be a repeat, back to the future. And let's not forget that back in July 2011, Obama had offered $700 billion cuts in Medicare. And even this time around, he offered $340 billion as a first taste in what he's willing to do. So Republicans know he's willing to cut $700 billion in Medicare and more in Medicaid. And he even said a few months ago, he, Obama, that he liked the idea of reducing the COLA on Social Security. So, boy, that one's coming back. In the next few months and throughout this year, this deficit-cutting nonsense is going to continue. What we've done is turn the clock back to 2011, and what are you going to see the debate on? It's going to be on raising the retirement age, 1-2 years for Social Security retirement benefits, and raising the Medicare eligibility age. There will be means tests. There will certainly be a reduction in the COLA. And there will be, as I predict and have been predicting, an increase in the monthly copays for Medicare and a big tightening of eligibility for Social Security disability insurance for new folks trying to get on disability, Social Security disability. Now, when we talk about Social Security, which is our topic today, and I'm going to introduce my special guest here very shortly, we're talking about at least three main elements. One is retirement benefits. In other words, your monthly pension from Social Security, which, by the way, averages less than $1,200 a year. Did you realize that? That the average Social Security recipient gets less than $1,200 a year? And women get even less. Average retirement for women is even less. And Medicare. Okay, Medicare, Part A, hospital. Part B, physicians or doctors, which you pay over $100 a month for. And prescription drugs, which you can pay a lot much more for. That's Part D. That's all part of Medicare. Medicare is part of Social Security. There's the retirement system, and there's the Medicare system, and then there's the disability system. And we're talking about over 50 million people who are on Social Security and or on Social Security disability, over 10 million on disability, and we're talking about cutting these folks back. A lot of them are going to be destitute if we do even just a little, and some of them are going to die. Now, the attack on Social Security has been going on a long time, and my guest is going to talk about that. I've talked about that, written about that in my books as well. It goes way back to Ronald Reagan. That was the first big attack on Social Security. And then there was an attack late in Clinton's term in office, late 90s. And then Bush, of course, really tried to take it on. And then under Obama, ever since we've had this Simpson-Bowles deficit-cutting commission ruling, which is Obama's commission, we've had the newest attack on Social Security and Medicare. This looks like the most dangerous one, most likely to succeed. I also, before I introduce my guest, want this audience to realize Social Security is not the problem. Social Security, in fact, has been subsidizing the U.S. deficits for more than a quarter century. Yes, yes. It's been bringing in a surplus because the tax, Social Security payroll tax, has been going up. The base goes up every year on what you can tax. And it's produced, along with federal pensions, more than $2.4 trillion in surpluses since the 1980s. Now, the government has borrowed that surplus, taken that real money taken from your paycheck, and spent it on wars and tax cuts for the rich, mostly. Oh, it says we put a treasury bond there in the Social Security Trust Fund when we took the cash out. And, oh, you know, the treasury bonds are making interest. And actually, we owe it to ourselves. We borrowed from ourselves. You know, we haven't really taken that money out. Oh, yes, you have. The cash is gone. The T-bond is there. And if you ever wanted to cash the T-bonds in the Social Security Trust Fund, guess what that would do? Well, if you sold the T-bonds, well, that would raise the deficit, not the deficit, but it would raise the debt, the total debt. The politicians aren't going to cash in those T-bonds. And then they say, well, the problem is long-term. We got 77 million baby boomers who are going to retire. So the problem's really long-term. Not really. The fixes to long-term Social Security and Medicare are minimal. We'll talk about those at the end. But I want to introduce my guest right now. This is a Mr. Eric Larson. Okay, Eric Larson is a kind of a special fellow here, we're going to see. He's written this book that is the, I would say, the definitive history and analysis of Social Security. It's called The People's Pension, The Struggle to Defend Social Security Since Reagan. Eric is an independent journalist and activist who's been writing on politics, the economy, finance, and retirement for many years. His work has appeared in The Village Voice, The Nation, Counterpunch, Z Magazine, Perspectives. His most recent book is the Social Security book, which, by the way, has won a Booklist Editor's Choice Award for 2012. Eric lives in Massachusetts and is a longtime anti-war and social activist. Welcome, Eric Larson. Glad to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Jack.
Eric, let's just jump right in it. Why did you decide to write this book now?
Well, it goes back a few years, actually. I was running a magazine back in the mid-90s for pension fund executives, and that was about the period where Social Security privatization really began to take off as a viable political discussion in Washington.
My God, did you say the 1990s? Bill Clinton?
In the mid-90s. Sorry?
I'm joking, of course. Kind of a
I had to get
in there because everyone thinks it's only Republicans who attack Social Security. Not true.
No, you're absolutely right. And when I say it became a viable political discussion, that means it was something that people of both parties could talk about in that sort of blessed sort of bipartisan way that they love so much in Washington. And I was at the time running a magazine for pension executives, and I kept running into this issue, and I became very, very puzzled by the idea that something like Social Security is an immensely popular program and absolutely vital to American working people, could suddenly be discussed in this way as though it was something that could be turned into private accounts. And I began looking around for any kind of book I could find on the history of this debate and what it really meant, and I couldn't find one. So eventually I just kind of bit the bullet and decided to write it myself. The thing that I began to find very interesting as I delved more into it was the origins of Social Security and why Social Security is different from other government programs. It's not a welfare program. It is a contributory program that everybody pays into. And as you pointed out earlier, Medicare is very much the same way as is disability. There's a kind of an ideological or a philosophic connection between Social Security going all the way back to sort of mutual aid as it was advocated in the 19th century. And so I began to see that a lot of the discussion around Social Security was really kind of turned on its head. We were being told by people who wanted to privatize Social Security that wouldn't it be better if you owned your own account, if you owned this thing rather than having to depend on the government for it. Well, the fact is we already do own Social Security. By paying payroll taxes, this is something that is our property. It's something we own collectively as a community of workers. And that's something that people who are critics of the program try very hard to obscure to make it seem like that's not the case. But I think that in a way, part of the key to saving Social Security, removing it from this sort of 30-year political crisis that it's been in. In fact, it's more than that. It goes back not just to Reagan, but to the Carter administration. The first real serious attempts to cut Social Security were under Carter. Every single president, Democrat and Republican, since then has tried at one time or another during their administration to cut Social Security. And one of the ways that we need to combat this is to educate people about what Social Security really is, that it's a social insurance program, it's something that belongs to them, and it's not something the government can simply do with as it pleases.
Oh, you mean it's not an entitlement? It's actually wages we've paid into this thing. So Social Security benefits are just deferred wage payments, right?
Well, they're deferred wage payments, and there's something that, ultimately, I think the key point for me is that as such, they belong to us. They're not something that we have surrendered in some way and turned over to the government to do with it as it pleases. It has an obligation to us, and I think that that's really the key word. I would like to replace the word entitlement with obligation, that this is something that belongs to us, that the government has in trust, and it owes us the benefits at the end of the day because we've paid for them.
Kind of like the wages we earn. Don't our wages belong to us?
Exactly, and our Social Security benefits belong to us exactly the same way.
Okay, Eric, we take breaks here every 15 minutes, so this is a good segue. Let's take a brief break for a minute or so. We'll come right back, and I want you to talk about, is there a Social Security crisis?
Sure.
Okay, this is Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. So we're going to take a quick break and be right back with Eric Larson, author of The People's Pension.
Now we'll stand the flood. There's a new world coming. I can see the light. I'm a jack of all trades. We'll be all right.
Alternative Visions. My guest is Eric Larson, author of the book The People's Pension, The Struggle to Defend Social Security Since Reagan. I can't recommend this book enough. It's a big book, but boy, is it chock full of facts and data and historical explanations and so forth. This is the definitive book, no doubt. Eric, before I ask you the next question, where can listeners go to... you got a website, or where can they go and buy this book?
Yeah, there's a few ways to do it, Jack. They can buy it either from my publisher, AK Press, on their website, or they can go to Amazon. It is available as an ebook from either of those sources. The other place they can go is to my blog, which is The People's Pension. Just Google Eric Larson, People's Pension, and there they can find more writings by me on Social Security and related topics, as well as links to order the book.
Good. Yeah, AK Press is a good source here. I would recommend that. Let's support as many publishers, distributors as we can. Amazon's doing pretty good by itself. And
of course, your local independent bookstore.
L-A-U-R-S-E-N for folks out there.
Yes.
If you want to Google him. Okay, so we'll give the book another reference here before the show is over for listeners. But I want to ask you, there's a lot of talk about, Social Security is in a crisis, and they either say it's broke now or it will be broke in the future. And, as they say in Washington, you got to create a crisis in order to get what you want. And the Republicans for a long time have said, we got to starve the beast, and that way we can kill it. What about Social Security in general here, Medicare as well as retirement benefits? Is it in a crisis now or in the future? What are the arguments in that regard?
Yeah, of course, you're absolutely right about Washington needing to create a crisis, and the unsettling things these days about Social Security is the Democrats and the Republicans seem to want to create a crisis about it. Now, what I argue in my book is that there are two kinds of crisis. There is a fiscal crisis, an actual crisis in terms of we don't have enough money to pay the benefits or we won't in the future, and then there's a political crisis. I argue that Social Security is not in a fiscal crisis. I argue that Social Security, however, is in a political crisis and has been for over 30 years because the Washington elite, the business elite, and so forth are so determined to find some way to cut it. Now, as far as the fiscal side of things, Social Security is secure, to coin a phrase, for the next 30 years. It's not going to run out of money. And what we have up to then is really projections, which tell us that if trends continue as they do, that we will not have enough money in the trust fund or coming in from payroll taxes at some point in the 2030s to continue to pay benefits. Now, again, those are projections. That's not reality. And I'd like to step back a second because there's a lot of different ways to slice and dice this, and there's a lot of scare numbers that get thrown out about Social Security. I think the most relevant analysis is this. Social Security in 1983 was amended. It was the last time some major changes were made in the system. And at the time, Social Security was projected to have enough money to pay benefits through the mid-2050s. Now, this is a significant date because at that point, the entire baby boom generation would be retired. And at that point, the cost of Social Security would basically stabilize and would stay the same pretty much as far as the eye can see, using the kind of calculations that the Social Security trustees use. Now, why didn't that happen? Why are Social Security's books not balanced through the mid-2050s? The reason is very simple. It's because for most of the last 40 years in this country, we've had real wage stagnation. Now, real wage stagnation means that that payroll taxes receipts suffer. We're not having as much coming in payroll taxes as is needed. And the result is that you don't have as much money building up to cover Social Security benefits. Now, why do we have wage stagnation? Well, there's a lot of reasons, most of which have to do with the economic policies that both parties have followed. But the key thing is that wage stagnation has nothing to do with Social Security. Social Security did not cause it. And so ultimately, one of the biggest things that can be done to preserve Social Security for the long term is simply to give Americans a raise. That would be one of the best ways to keep it going as far as the eye can see. Now, the reality is that the cost of benefits for Social Security and other retirement benefits, Medicaid and the host of other housing benefits and other kinds of programs that the federal government has for the elderly, will go up in the next 30 to 40 years as the baby boomers retire because we will have an older population. But this isn't something that we just discovered yesterday. This is something that's been true for a long time. And the reality is that if you look at the Congressional Budget Office's numbers, which are pretty authoritative, the cost of Social Security, the real cost, the portion of the economy that Social Security takes up today, the portion of GDP, as the term is used, is about 4.5%. About 4.5% of gross domestic product every year goes to pay for Social Security. By the time the 2050s run by and Social Security is paying benefits to all of the baby boomers, that'll rise to about 6%. Now, that's more money, but I would argue that it's well spent. I would also argue that it's not going to destroy the economy the way we're being told by Social Security's critics. There's also a lot of distortion going on here. Social Security is not just a cost. Social Security is something that helps working families because it means that elderly people can live independently. It means that communities are not burdened in terms of their welfare costs by seniors who are homeless or indigent, who are starving. If the proposals to cut Social Security really are not proposals to cut anything. They're proposals to take something that is paid out through the government and to shift it on directly onto the shoulders of working families. Now, that should disturb a lot of people because working families have a lot of things stacked against them these days. And to then shift all of those costs onto their shoulders would be a disaster for working Americans who can't really afford any more disasters these days. So that, I think, is that would be my response on the fiscal question.
Let me just comment on your point that I think is very appropriate about wage stagnation. You know, so much percent of your wage goes into the Social Security Trust Fund. And as you say, if wages aren't rising, well, then that means that there's less than going into it that should be going into it. And even given that we've generated a multi-trillion dollar surplus, we could have generated even more. Why do we have wage stagnation? Listeners, well, recessions, more frequent and deeper, unemployed people aren't paying into Social Security Trust Fund. A historic slow recovery since the 2008-09 recession. We still got 23 million people unemployed. They're not paying into it. 2 years of payroll tax cuts, which knock out $100 billion a year the last 2 years. Offshoring of high-paying jobs. A shift to part-time temporary jobs, contingent labor. We got 40 million folks now in that category. Destruction of the unions, and therefore wages don't rise. Minimum wage delays. We can go on and on. There's a whole number of actual reasons that the politicians are responsible for in both parties why, as you correctly point out, there's been no net real wage gain for 30 years in this country. All these examples are only some examples of why that's the case. And, of course, that translates into not as much money going into the Social Security Trust Fund as there should be. But nonetheless, even given that fact, as you point out correctly, there's no problem for another 25 years. Not to mention the fact that, you know, you always have this so-called surplus that's in the trust fund. Why can't we use that if we had to? Of course, we don't need to, but even if we had to, we could. Where's the problem? Where's the problem? Well, as you say, the problem is these phony projections about how Social Security is really a problem come down the road somewhere. It's phony. It's baked. It's not true, but they're scaring people. You know, if you want to get rid of something, you got to scare them that maybe they might not have it. That's what they've done with private pensions, personal pensions. That's how they've gutted the defined benefit pension plan and supplanted it with this phony 401k stuff. They scared the hell out of people and said, well, you know, we got to get rid of your pension. We can give you half, but you may not have any. Would you want to take half and we'll get rid of the pension, you know, and the airlines and the steel industry and so forth? That's what they did. Well, they're trying to do the same thing with Social Security, scare everybody that there's a problem when there isn't. Well, we're just about at the bottom of the hour. We have to take another break. But hold on, Eric. We got a lot more to talk about. And I have some more questions that I definitely want to ask you. We'll be right back. Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. Social Security is also Medicare, Part A, hospital, Part B, doctors, Part D, prescription drugs, and then we have Social Security disability on the third area. Can you comment on Medicare and Social Security disability, are these in danger? And why is there an attack on Medicare, which is the number one focus of phase two of this fiscal cliff negotiations, both by Obama and by Boehner and McConnell in the Senate? They've all said the main target is cutting Medicare.
What's going on there is it's very similar to the debate about Social Security. Medicare is not the issue, really. I think people on the progressive end of the spectrum do tend to say this a lot, and I'm glad they do. We don't have a Medicare problem. We have a health care problem in this country. Just like we don't have a retirement problem or Social Security problem, we have a health care problem. Medicare is actually more stable, and its costs in recent decades have risen actually much more slowly than those of the private health care system. And yet, on the Republican side and even on the Democratic side, we're constantly being told that Medicare is the problem, that it's what we have to cut if we want to lower health care costs in this country. Well, there's two things going on there. First of all, there is a hostility to any kind of collectively run or system of collective benefits of any sort, and Medicare is obviously that, as is Social Security. The second thing is that the private health care system, private health care providers of various sorts, are deathly afraid of having to endure any sort of cuts in their profits. And the best way to ensure that is to get Medicare out of the system and to force people more and more into private sector alternatives, as they like to call them. Medicare is not the cause of the healthcare problem by itself. In a lot of respects, it's one of the better operating parts of the system, as is Medicaid, as are veterans' health benefits. In fact, the real problem is that we have an out-of-control healthcare system that relies too much on the private sector and that puts too much power in the hands of providers. Other countries do not have this problem. And I would just point out that it's not just Medicare that is a victim of this in terms of the programs that we're talking about here. Disability, a lot of the cost of disability is health-related, and so the cost of disability goes up as the healthcare crisis spirals. Also, Social Security is affected because more and more of the cost of elder health care is not coming through Medicare itself. It is coming from out-of-pocket expenses that the elderly have to pay. Also, Medicare premiums, a lot of people don't know this, are deducted from your Social Security check before it's even cut. And so the amount of Social Security that you receive every month is being whittled down by Medicare premiums, and then the amount of money you're able to use towards housing and food and other basic costs is whittled down by the fact that more and more of your out-of-pocket expenses are coming out of your payroll, rather your Social Security check, to pay for health care, which Social Security was not intended to do. Medicare was supposed to be the health care part of that system. Instead, more and more of people's Social Security discretionary money is going towards health care. So what we need to do in this country is to reform the health care system from the bottom up. Obamacare woefully failed to do this. But the alternative now is we have Republicans and a lot of Democrats saying, well, we have to simply take it out of the hide of Medicare, which isn't really the source of the problem.
Yes, well, you know, Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, not really about a health care act, as others on the show, guests have pointed out, it was a health insurance company reform act.
Yes.
And actually, more was given to the health insurance companies than was taken from them. So it really does not address the health care cost crisis, the health care for profit crisis that has been ravaging this country and the economy in this country for almost 20 years now. That's the problem. You know, the U.S. spends $2.8 trillion of its GDP, 18% of GDP, on health care. That compares to about $1 trillion in other advanced countries where they have Medicare for All, okay, a national Medicare service. So we're paying almost $2 trillion to middlemen and paper pushers like health insurance companies. We're subsidizing health insurance companies. And, you know, those health insurance companies now are jacking up their premiums 20% after the Health Care Act was passed. They're gouging folks again. So nothing has really changed. You're absolutely right about that on the Medicare side. The other problem with Medicare, I think, is Part D, which is prescription drugs, they never passed the tax to cover it. It's all out of the deficit. So no wonder it's contributing to the deficit, about $50 billion a year, prescription Part D. And, of course, Part B, the Medicare doctors and physicians that the private sector's got its teeth into already, is another part of the problem because of rising costs. The problem is rising costs, and nothing's been done about rising costs, health care costs in this country, and that includes under Obama and the Health Care Act. Nothing was really done about rising costs, which means they're going to continue as they are. It's interesting. Listeners should note this fact. In 2011, the Social Security Trust Fund trustees, those guys who run the trust fund, issued a report on Medicare, not the retirement, and they said that you could cover all the pending cost increases on the Medicare side, Part A, B, and D, right? If you simply raised the Medicare tax, in other words, we pay 1.45% by 0.25, instead of paying 1.45, pay 1.7 for the next 10 years, and then pay another 0.25, 1.95 for the second 20 years, and that would solve all your Medicare cost increase problems until 2040. Just like there is no problem on the Social Security retirement side for a simple 0.5 increase in the Medicare payroll tax, you could solve all your problems for another 25 years. You don't have to cut Medicare. As I've been predicting, they're not going to cut the benefits. They're going to raise the out-of-pocket cost for Part B and Part D for everybody. So it's going to really cut into Social Security benefits, as you point out, retirement benefits, even more. That's what's coming, folks.
Yeah, I think it's worth pointing out also that the interesting thing about the scenario that you just sketched out, Jack, about with where those taxes are raised modestly, is that they could be raised so slowly that they would rise more slowly than the cost of living, and so the impact would really be very, very minimal if it's done over a long period of time. The same thing could be done with Social Security payroll taxes. Very, very little impact, but there is such a phobia in Washington to raising taxes at all that these kinds of ideas are simply not ever discussed there in the sort of echo chamber that we have in Washington.
Given that thought, what is, explain to the listeners, what is scrap the cap?
Well, scrap the cap, the way Social Security payroll taxes are set up today is the tax only applies to the first $110,000 of a person's income. And the reason for that is because...
Oh, wait, I got to correct you. Earned income. Wage salary
earned
income.
Yes, absolutely. Earned income. Not dividends and capital gains and so forth. Now, the reason for this is because Social Security was supposed to be a minimal benefit for working people. And if you made, let's say, $1 million a year, it would be sort of outrageous to pay benefits based on an income of $1 million a year, because that's not really what Social Security was set up for. Now, the result is that payroll tax levels have not really kept up with the rise of wealth of, let's say, the top 1% or 2% of the population. So you have people collecting Social Security today who only paid up to 110 tax on up to $110,000 of earned income. Now that's a very low level, and an awful lot of the deficit of Social Security, in fact almost the whole thing over a period of 75 years, could be eliminated by simply scrapping that cap entirely and saying, okay, you have to pay Social Security payroll taxes on your entire income. Now the flip side of that is that in order to be fair, you would then have to pay benefits on $1 million a year, let's say, of income. But most studies have shown that that's a fairly small group of people, and that the benefit to the system of raising the cap or scrapping the cap would be much greater. There's a lot of proposals along these lines. There's proposals to completely scrap the cap and simply say you have to payroll tax on your entire income, or to raise it, let's say, to $250,000 a year, which would really sort of encompass most of the population. But either way, it would be a way to make Social Security a more equitable system, because really, if you're going to raise taxes, the first target should be people who are making more money, who are earning more money, rather than sort of subjecting people with lower incomes to higher payroll tax. And then secondly, you would be funding the system almost as far as the eye could see.
Yeah, I've heard and I've seen estimates that if you raise the cap, in other words, the $110,000 that you're paying the 12.4% on, half, of course, is just paid by employees, half by the employer. If you raise that to $200,000, where it should be, and we're talking only about wage and salary income once again, if you raised it to that you would solve all retirement needs for all the baby boomers and whatever for another 75 years. So one simple measure to raise it to $200,000, no problem, Social Security retirement benefits for 75 more years, and if you simply raise the 0.25%, even in stages, as you say, for Medicare, again, no problem for another 50 years. I mean, why don't we hear these kinds of discussions and debates among these folks who are about to hack and hew both Medicare and Social Security benefits?
Well, the immediate reason is that critics of Social Security, whenever the subject of scrap the cap comes up, they say that would be a job killer. We'd be raising payroll taxes on employers and employees. People would not hire. People would not create new jobs because they don't want to pay these payroll taxes. Now, that's basically nonsense. The Social Security payroll tax started out very, very low when FDR and his government first instituted Social Security in the 30s. It's been raised quite a few times since then, and I don't think there's really any basis for saying that it has killed jobs over the last 70-something years. That's just not true. But yet that argument in today's sort of economic discussion culture carries a lot of weight. The second reason, of course, is that employers simply don't want to pay more taxes. We live in an age when companies like GE essentially pay negative taxes. They have enormous tax departments that are essentially profit centers for them that are there to figure out ways generate tax credits, generate negative taxes for them. And in an environment like that, there is such a phobia to taxes in the corporate world that the lobbying pressure against it is just immense.
Let's take a break and talk about that tax issue and whether it kills jobs or even creates jobs if you cut it when we come back. A brief break. This is Alternative Visions. Jack Rasmus. We'll be back in a moment.
And you learn to make do. You take the old, you make it new. If I had me a gun, I'd find the bastards and shoot them on sight. I'm a jack of all trades. We'll be alright. I'm a jack of all trades.
Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. The topic is Social Security and Medicare and the new attack, the most serious, dangerous attack on Social Security and Medicare that is now in progress and will rear its ugly head here in the next few months and throughout the rest of this year. It's the number one target. As Republicans have said, no more tax hikes on us rich folks. Everything's got to be spending cuts from now on. And what they really mean is Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid are the main targets. So the danger levels are very, very high. We're very much in the red zone here, and everyone should keep that in mind. I want to say a few words about this this question of why Social Security has generated so much opposition within the U.S. elite. And, of course, we know it has. And as you pointed out, it's really, in major part, a question of profits. You know, bankers and so forth can't stand the fact that they're not making any money off the Social Security Trust Fund. They want to get at that. They want to make fees, fee income and so forth, and trading income, as they've done with 401ks that have destroyed the private pension system. They want to do it with Social Security as well, and it's really a profit objective driving this. They can't stand the fact they can't get at that money. And also, there's opposition to it because, as I've been writing for some time, and in my recent book, Obama's Economy, Recovery for the Few, and in my articles on austerity, that, you know, they want to blame Social Security, because if they blame Social Security and Medicare for the cause of the deficits, they can protect their taxes. You know, to the extent you can deflect attention to something else, so you can protect what you really want to protect. Or as I've always said since the Simpson-Bowles Commission, it's the tax cuts, stupid. They want to protect the Bush tax cuts. Which leads us to this question. As you pointed out, they don't like increases in Social Security taxes because they claim it will reduce investment and jobs. Well, that's absolutely nonsense. As an economist, listeners, I assure you, there is no correlation between tax cuts and job creation. And therefore, there is no correlation between tax hikes and the lack of job creation. Look, $5 trillion in tax cuts for wealthy and corporations since 2001. What's the picture on job creation in the U.S.? We have no more jobs today than we had 12 years ago. Well, that ought to tell you something. $5 trillion in tax cuts and no net new job creation? No correlation between the two whatsoever. But everyone believes that, including the 535 dummies in Congress. I really think that you could probably count on one hand the folks in that institution that understand anything about the essentials of economic reality. Oh, sorry, Eric, I had to get that one out.
No problem.
What needs to be done? What do we need to do in this fight, this real fight? This is not abstract. Coming up here, next 2 months, what do we need to do to make Social Security, retirement, and Medicare, and disability that now covers 10 million people, to make it politically secure? And what will happen if we don't succeed in protecting it?
If we don't succeed in protecting it, it's very clear what's going to happen. There's been a roadmap that was laid out in 2011 when Obama was first negotiating with Boehner over a grand bargain on deficit reduction, is that Social Security will essentially be sacrificed for this sort of illusory goal of deficit reduction. They've already more or less decided that that if they could find the proper package for it, they would include what's known as the chain CPI, which is basically a formula for cutting benefits over time. Add that in. The Republicans are pushing for things like raising the retirement age, which would essentially be another cut to Social Security, as well as means testing it so that essentially you turn it into more of a welfare type program. All of these things are on the table, but particularly the chain CPI, and it's quite likely, the Republicans, I should say, have made it quite clear that in order to conclude a deal with them over spending cuts, over the rise of the debt ceiling, that Obama is going to have to come up with some kind of agreement to cut entitlements. So that means Social Security, that means Medicare. The Medicare demands that the Republicans have made are outrageous enough that Obama has made it fairly clear that the one thing on entitlements that he is willing to do is to cut Social Security. And so we're very likely to see something like that coming out of the administration in the next couple of months. Nobody really believes that Obama will stand firm on the deficit, on the debt ceiling, which is what he said he will do, or that he will not negotiate on the sequester, which he said he'll do. And people in the White House have put out pretty clearly that the chain CPI, which is this formula change to Social Security, will be on the table. Now, to stop this from happening, I think that, first of all, working people in this country, progressive people, need to put on a full court press and make it quite clear to their elected representatives that not only will this be looked at negatively, but they will be opposed in their next campaign by a candidate who is willing to defend Social Security.
I would go a step further, Eric. Let's do all that, but you know what? You better folks get in the street and protest, because writing letters to Congress that has already been greased on this issue, as you say, is not going to prove any more successful. And, you know, it's not only raising or cutting the COLA and a means test and raising the age. They're proposing to raise the age of Medicare. And
yeah,
I predict that they're not talking about, they're going to raise your out-of-pocket costs for Part B and D. And they're going to cut eligibility for Social Security disability dramatically. They've already begun doing that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Jack, that they do intend to raise the Medicare retirement age as well, even though that would be a horrible thing for people in their later working years or early years of retirement. I just point out one thing, though, is that part of the story that I tell in my book, The People's Pension, is that over the last 30 years of attempts to cut Social Security, working people, and particularly the labor movement, has actually been pretty successful at stopping it from happening. It's just that they've had to get out there over and over again to make sure that it doesn't happen. And so it's going to be absolutely crucial for people to get out there and make sure that the message gets through that cuts to Social Security are not acceptable. But we can win this fight. We've won it before, and we can win it again. And so I think that this is something people should feel very heartened about, is that we've got a long track record of success.
Eric, I'd like to thank you very much and give one more reference to your book, The People's Pension, The Struggle to Defend Social Security Since Reagan. You can get it on AK Press. You can get it on Amazon. And what's your website again, Eric?
Is The People's Pension. That's the name of my blog. You can Google Larsen, LARSEN, People's Pension, and there's more of my writings there on Social Security.
Folks, read this book. Very important. And folks, don't sit back and wait for your politicians to save it. You better get out there and get active in your union and elsewhere. This is Jack Rasmus. Next week, we're going to talk about why are the economists so wrong in predicting the economy?